Welcome to the Jess Cagle Podcast with Julia Cunningham. Each week, Jess and Julia sit down with Hollywood's biggest names to discuss their current projects and take a trip down memory lane as they dive deep into their classic catalogs. SiriusXM presents the Jess Cagle Podcast with Julia Cunningham. Now, here are your hosts, Jess and Julia.
National treasure, American icon. I mean, literally, the list goes on and on. Star, of course, of Barry, which is finally back on HBO. Henry Winkler, welcome to the show.
I'm so happy to be here. I really am.
For anybody that maybe needs a refresher, because it has been a while since it, you know, since season two.
3 years.
Well, tell us what Cousineau learned at the very end of season two.
Okay, first of all,
that sets everything up.
Yes, I will tell you, I'm in bed. Somebody whispered something in my ear a few days ago. Now, first I will tell you that that bed is on stage 19 at Paramount Studios. Stage 19 is where we did Happy Days for 10 years. So it was like full circle that I had these two incredible shows on the same soundstage. That made me very happy.
I love that.
I took Bill by the hand, Bill Hader. I said, the donuts were here, and there was a payphone here by the door.
Wow.
This was the living room. But anyway, so now I'm in bed, and I am almost in a catatonic state. And I sit up, and I remember that Fuchs, played by Stephen Root, whispered in my ear, Barry Berkman did this. And what he did was he took the love of my life and ripped her out of my heart and shot her dead. And that's the way we start season three.
Which kind of changes the whole dynamic of the show.
Yes.
It does.
But I love that you said they never want to repeat themselves, because they have said it is really hard to go from there. And yet, having seen now the first two episodes.
Well, I've loved the wait through the first and second season, because Bill Hader's character of Barry has revealed a specific story from his time in the military as a Marine. And Gene constantly says to him, you know, you killed somebody and you got away with it. He says it to him all the time as a reminder. And yet now that weight is so much heavier surrounding what now probably Gene knows. And to look clearly from this season where we pick up with Gene and grief, but anger.
And revenge.
And Barry in a total mental health spiral.
Barry is like my...
It's like my other son. Yeah,
my other son, the son I like. You know, it's big. But I'm so happy that you watch. My wife, Stacy, and I watched, and inadvertently, almost the entire marathon this weekend of the first two seasons. And it's amazing how many times I've seen it, and you still see things you either forgot or you see for the first time.
It's so well done.
Thank you.
What about the scenes? Because I think we see the very let's just say this. There are some scenes of you in a trunk
of a car.
And Bill Hader's driving you around.
Yes,
and
at one point
I think this might be in the second episode of the new season, but he brings you food.
Yes.
The fact that you guys, because you start out wanting to kill him,
right?
Then you end up, okay, I'll get in the trunk of your car and you can bring me burgers.
He gives me my change.
And the change. The idea that you guys make that work is really incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a tall order for two actors, because it's also really heightened emotionally.
Can I tell you something? In structure comes freedom. And for any actor, for any profession. But Bill and Alec Berg know what they want. And in that structure, you are free to add your Henry spice. And you're with him, and you just buy into the reality they're creating. And all of a sudden, it just seems natural that he gives you a burger as he closes the hood, the trunk. You say, could I just eat with you up front so I don't vomit while we're traveling, Pleakin?
No.
Well, I want to talk about the whole scene of Gene confronting Barry, but it leads up with Gene opening this box.
Yes.
A gift from Rip Torn, and I wanted to read what the message says, because it's so perfect.
Just before you do, I'm going to say that gun.
Yeah, oh, tell us.
That gun was screen used by Rip Torn in a movie, and I have it.
Right, and it says this in this box. It says, couscous, try not to blow your dick off with this, Rip, parenthetical, dictated, but not read.
I missed that part.
Oh my gosh, I had to write it down because it was so funny.
They have that all over the place. And I'm now going to use this gun in real life.
Yes.
It was a movie gun. Now it's going to become a life gun. And I take it with me. I kiss my grandson. I nod to my son. And I walk out of my apartment, my house. And I'm ready, because Barry took the love of my life and smashed her against the universe into little pieces.
God, I have chills right now. Getting like a real scene from Henry
Winkler. Literally right here. Why can you tell us about Cousineau's development, Gene's development over the next season?
I will say
this. Where does he go?
As a mature person, they made me run more than I have since 1958.
Okay.
I'm not kidding. I mean, I'm really good from my waist up, but my knees, I have to negotiate with them getting out of bed. Okay, anytime you're ready, boys, let's go. All right? Hey, take your time. All right? All together now. And they made me run down an alley, but more than once. Because there's one take is never enough.
Mm. I'm so curious about, because there's a lot of talk about, to use the word again, what an asshole Gene was to work with, you know, back in the day.
Anyway, nobody wants to work with him. I was just being
true to my art. Nobody wants to work with him again. Do you, for your backstory, for doing the character, do you create a whole thing about what he did and what he was liked on the set?
Do you know what? I don't do that. What I did was, in the very beginning, I researched it. There was a teacher here in this town. I think that Alec Berg's wife, her notes from that class were the basis. Here was a man. I looked him up on the YouTube and I kind of dressed like him. Here was a man who was maybe a good teacher, was mean. But here's the kicker. This will tell you everything you need to know to build your character. Now, an acting student, you earn money, you're a barista. You take that money, do I buy food or do I go to acting class? And this teacher made his actors buy his original art. They have barely enough money to pay him, and he's selling his paintings. Can I just say, sir? No, you don't talk about the dead. Fuck you.
What a horrible. You are listening to The Jess Cagle Show with Julia Cunningham. We are here starting off the show today with the great Henry Winkler.
Thank you.
Barry is back on HBO. Yeah. Finally, you said it had been 3 years?
Truly. Now, we shot the pilot in 2016.
Wow.
You know, we were at the table. We were reading the first two scripts of the year. They had lunches in those open aluminum tin foil, you know, like turkey things. And we were handpicking the food, just putting them on our plate. We were hugging. Came in the next day. We're going to read the next two. The NBA shut down their season. They looked at us and they said, we got to go home, kids. 8 weeks. We'll be back in 8 weeks. 3 years later.
Wow.
Wow.
Did you use the time? What did you do during the time that you had down?
Honestly, I did a lot of Zooms. I did, charity Zooms with people. I made a movie directed by Stephanie Lang. It is now called Four Corners, and it is the story of a family. They sent me 3 cell phones, a laptop, a microphone that was kind of fuzzy that recorded, a light, 12 miles of cable, and a pillow. And I went around with one cell phone and showed them all the locations. They picked the location. One man talked to me for, I don't know, a millennium about what to plug in where. And we literally made a feature film that way. Margot Martindale was my sister. Another friend was Ann Dowd. And then these young, wonderful actors who you've seen on a lot of different shows. And we had scenes together, either on a laptop or on a cell phone. It was amazing.
Where do people see Four Corners?
I would now think that it's on like streaming somewhere
on
in
demand,
the universe.
Something.
Yeah. It's on demand. Yeah, I believe it
is.
I haven't seen it yet.
No, I know.
But I said, you know what? I don't even think about it. I've got to do this because I don't know that a film in my lifetime I've ever made this way. And Stephanie was wonderful. My acting partners were wonderful. It was great.
Do you know what? I've obviously, we know so much about you, but one of the things that I've not heard that much about is you were born, your parents had come over from Berlin to New York, right?
My father got a work visa for 6 weeks to leave Nazi Germany in 1939.
39.
Yes, just and in the nick of time. His brother, Helmut, was able to get out also, but waited one day because he was having a white smoking jacket made at the tailor. And he was going to pick it up and leave. And they picked him up that night. So my parents got out of Germany. My father took his mother's jewelry, his wife's jewelry, bought a box of chocolate, melted the chocolate, nuts and all, poured it over each piece of jewelry, put them back in the box, put it under his arm. So that when he went by a checkpoint, if the Nazis said, "Are you taking anything of value?" He said, "No, we're going to be right back. Check, you can open my bags. I've got nothing." And all the while, he knew he could not go back. And the jewelry was encased in chocolate.
Wow.
And on my son's bar mitzvah, 13th birthday, I gave him his great-grandfather's pocket watch that came out of Germany encased in chocolate.
He put the pocket watch in chocolate. How did that, when you think back on it now, in hindsight, how did that shape you? The fact that, one, there was such, you almost didn't exist, right? Because they barely made it out.
Absolutely.
So many family members lost.
Yes.
During the Holocaust.
I never had a grandparent. When I write in my children's books, there is a grandfather. Hank Zipser has a grandfather. Yeah. He is the grandfather I dreamt I had.
And how did that, I'm sure it shaped you in many, many ways, but top of mind, what impact did that have on your psyche and your direction in life?
One is tenacity. 2 is courage. Now, I don't have necessarily, or I didn't have growing up, a lot of courage in my life, but in my acting life, I was able to speak up for my vision. The fact that he left, my mom and my father left, came to New York, started a new life. I had a good education. I had a roof over my head. We had the worst chocolate cake my mother made. Was horrible.
just terrible.
They were not great people, but I admired them for that. So tenacity and courage.
Yeah, because you can't have had a lot of encouragement to become an actor.
No, right? Very little encouragement as a human being. Now, I don't know if it was because they were German, but certainly they didn't know about dyslexia, and I understand that. But when you are a parent, you look at your child without any information whatsoever in your stomach, you know she's fine, he's fine. Oh, there might be a problem. Something is going on. Why don't we just check? They called me stupid, and there was no way I was getting geometry. Ever.
I'm curious about your time, because you've talked a lot about how, like, being dyslexic, how it was about memorizing, that you would,
yes,
you would have to get to that place. And I'm curious what it was like once you had really settled into theater specifically.
Yes.
And, like, at Yale Drama School, how, in my mind, must have been intimidating just being with your peers in a learning situation, but also, like, what could possibly be just, like, an aggressive situation of all of these young people wanting to, like,
it's
step
true.
Ahead
yes.
at something as prestigious as something like Yale, and that just being such an intimidating factor when you have a learning disability.
Yes, and you know what it is? It's will. I was one of, and I've said this before, but I was one of those toys that had sand at the bottom. You punch it, it goes down. And it comes right back up. You blow up like this cowboy or this clown. And I was that. I went down and I got right back up because I knew what I wanted. And I wanted to be exactly in this chair right now. I wanted to, whatever I was doing, I wanted you to invite me to be here in this studio right now. And boom, I'm here.
One of your first, and I remember this episode so well, but well before Happy Days, one of the very
yes.
first things you get to do was the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
First show.
First
one
show.
Week, I landed, I went, I talked to Ed Weinberger. He was the producer. He said, hey, I don't have a script. I said, okay. And I showed him the pictures of all the plays I've done at Yale. Who cares? I did. I
Look
showed
at me.
Him, hey, this is the reason you should hire me. And he said, I know one line from the script. You're going to sit at a table by yourself. You're going to ask for the salt from the main table where all of the stars of the show are having dinner. I took a glass that filled with pencils on his desk. I don't know where I got the nerve. Emptied it. Picked up one pencil. Clanged, clink, 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 clink. He looked up, Ed Weinberger. I said, sir, do not bother yourself when you get a second. Could you pass the salt? And I just, by the time I got back to the Sunset Marquee in Hollywood, where I was staying on Charlie Hayde's couch because I didn't have enough money to get a room of my own, I had the part.
And that line's in the show, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, they kept it in. It's Mary Tyler Moore always gave, or all of her dinner parties were always a disaster, and somebody brought an extra guest, you.
Yes.
And you had to sit over in that thing. Yes. That is so funny.
Yeah.
Were they nice to you? Was Mary nice to you?
They were lovely. But and I will tell you, I learned a big lesson. They went about their way, you know, lunch was called, and they scattered. Each had an interview, a meeting, take a nap, have lunch. I didn't know where to go. And I saw it at that moment. If my career blossoms, this will never happen to a young person who comes to our a set I'm on. I will always let them know, okay, we're going to break for lunch. There are two possibilities. The canteen is over there. The lunchroom is over there. You stand on line in one and the order in the other. But I never wanted anyone to feel, I have no idea where to go. And I'm an adult. And I just felt completely lost.
One thing that I love about Barry is that it is a good mixture of like real true theater people, yourself,
yes.
like Stephen Root.
Yes.
And like true
Goldberg.
Sarah Goldberg. But then like true masters of like improv, i.e. a Bill Hader or an Alec Berg. And
yes.
I think it works perfectly. But I wondered if for a long time they've kept everyone apart for those magical moments. Like we just got to Stephen Root
yes.
and Gene Cousineau, like Fuchs coming together finally. It's almost like they've been, they know what they're doing, obviously, but it's like withholding that quote magic?
I don't know. I cannot answer that question. All I know is we had such a wonderful time in the woods where he is, you know, showing me what Billy, Barry did.
Yes. Oh, it's incredible.
And then the pandemic, we were all in our pods. I saw this wonderful cast that I'm friends with. I saw them if by chance they came in for makeup, if by chance they came in for ADR to do their lines again. Otherwise, we were completely isolated. And the only one, the only common thread was Bill Hader.
Yeah.
He went from story to story.
I want like NoHo Hank moments with Gene. I want Elsie Fisher, who's joined the cast.
I know, we
show.
Love Elsie.
Wait until you see Elsie.
So good.
Well, she started when she was 13.
Yeah.
And I met her I had just seen eighth grade. And now we're standing online together doing press at the premiere. And here is this 20-year-old. And I thought, oh my God, you are as good as you were. Oh, she is delightful. Delightful.
We love Elsie.
She comes on the show a lot.
Yeah.
She does?
Yeah, yeah. She loves movies.
Yeah.
And she loves horror movies specifically. We'll have her come on and just talk about
what movies she's watching.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. When she's here, you have to give her my warmest regards.
Why don't you come?
You should come too.
Okay, I will.
We could have but a I know nothing. Reunion
I don't watch
show.
Horror movies.
What do you
watch? I get too scared.
Oh, she loves
you know what I like? I like movies that are like Popcorn Saturday, I miss going to the theater in New York, and I miss going to the movies. My wife and I would go to the symphony at 2:00 in the afternoon, be elevated by the music, and then go and have dinner and still have time to go to the cinema and to, you know, on Olympic at Westwood.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And go to the movies. Be home by 10.
You'd just go see, you'd go to the symphony and then Stallone.
Yeah, exactly.
Or whatever big movie
Marvel movie.
Yes. Something. Oh, we loved it. With our best friends, Lynn and Frank, we would go. Yeah, he's a psychiatrist, and she was a producer.
Yeah. Henry Winkler, it's always great to have you here. Thank you for joining us. Barry airs Sundays at 10 on HBO and available to stream on HBO Max. Thank you again.
This has been the Jess Cagle Podcast with Julia Cunningham, a SiriusXM production. Hear new episodes every Tuesday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.